Mr. President, I rise to express opposition to the nomination of General George Casey to be the next Chief of Staff of the Army. Let me first make clear that General Casey has had a long and distinguished career in the United States Army and is deserving of the utmost respect and gratitude for the contributions he has made to this nation's defense over his long career. At his nomination hearing on February 1st, I stated my appreciation to him and his family for their extraordinary service and personal sacrifice, as well as the support they have provided to the men and women in uniform and their families. I emphasized then, and I reiterate today, that I do not in any way question General Casey's honor, patriotism, or service to America, nor do I question his sincere desire to continue serving the Army. At this critical moment in our history, however, with the obvious lack of success in achieving our goals in Iraq, this nomination should bear unusual weight in our deliberations. All of the armed services, and particularly our ground forces, are undergoing difficult changes to adjust to the global war on terror. The next Chief of Staff of the Army will be faced with enormous challenges in matters relating to recruiting, training, and retention of soldiers, the continuing organizing the Army, and requirements for the procurement of weapons systems. The next Chief of Staff must be able to evaluate ongoing strategy and be able to react with sound advice when unforeseen challenges are encountered. Perhaps most importantly, the next Chief of Staff must be unconstrained in evaluating the past while giving advice for the future. I have questioned in the past and question today a number of the decisions and judgments that General Casey has made over the past 2.5 years. During that time, conditions in Iraq have gotten markedly and progressively worse, and the situation now can be best described as dire and deteriorating. I regret that our window of opportunity to reverse momentum may be closing. The bombing at the Golden Mosque in Samarra last February sparked sectarian violence throughout Iraq, and in Baghdad in particular. Yet in the face of this dramatic change in the Iraqi security environment, our military strategy, and I emphasize military strategy, remained essentially unchanged. Instead of conducting a traditional counterinsurgency campaign, our troops focused on training and equipping Iraqis, hoping in vain that they could do the job. After repeated elections and political events demonstrated that the democratic process would not on its own bring down the level of violence, our troops did not begin focusing on protecting the population. Instead, coalition and Iraqi forces launched Operation Together Forward in June 2006. This operation aimed at securing Baghdad failed. Yet the coalition launched Operation Together Forward 2 in August in a very similar fashion. The result, predictably, was a similar failure. Now, Mr. President, I'm not going to go over the many times that I complained about a failed strategy, the number of times I asked our leaders, both civilian and military, why they were continued to pursue this failed strategy, why I continued to give speeches denouncing the strategy and predicting that we would end up in the dire circumstances we are in today. But it's all a matter of responsibility, a matter of responsibility. General Casey, more than any other individual, has been the architect of U.S. military strategy in Iraq over the last 2 years. During this time, he consistently presented unrealistically rosy, optimistic assessments of the situation in Iraq. In December 2004, General Casey stated at a Pentagon press conference, quote, "My view of winning is that we are broadly on track to accomplishing our objectives, with Iraqi security forces that are capable of maintaining domestic order and denying Iraq as a safe haven for terror. And I believe we are on track to get there by December of 05. I'll repeat that. I believe we are on track to get there by December of 05. Almost a year later, in September of 2005, General Casey repeated, quote, "We have a strategy and a plan for success in Iraq, and we are broadly on track in achieving our goals." Last October of 2006, he stated, before the Armed Services Committee, I believe, quote, "The idea that the country is aflame in sectarian violence is just not right." General Casey said, quote, "I do not subscribe to the Civil War idea." You know, Mr. President, we have hearings to try to get an honest, unvarnished opinion of how our armed forces are doing, what their needs are, what their missions are. And, of course, because we're in a war, what's happening in Iraq? We're not on the ground there. We visit frequently. But we rely, to a large degree, obviously, on the judgment and the recommendations and the evaluation of our military leaders. Statement of General George W. Casey before the Armed Services Committee, opening statement on 23 June 2005. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, et cetera, et cetera. Quote, remember, this is 23 June 2005, and I quote, "In the past year, the Iraqis, supported by the coalition, have established an interim government, neutralized the Shia insurgency, eliminated terrorist and insurgent safe havens across Iraq, mobilized their security forces to confront the insurgency, et cetera, et cetera." Mr. President, how could you possibly give that kind of assessment? Senator Levin says, well, we should have put pressure on the Iraqis. Well, maybe we should have put pressure on the Iraqis. But it was pretty obvious to even the most uninitiated that the Iraqis weren't performing. They weren't performing. In his nomination last Thursday, I asked General Casey about these and other statements he's made, both publicly and privately, that seem entirely at odds with the situation as most observers find it. I noted, for example, that in recent days, the Secretary of Defense, General Pace, and Admiral Fallon, the new head of U.S. Central Command, have all stated that the United States is not winning in Iraq and that we have had a failed strategy. These were clear-cut, realistic statements, but General Casey disagreed, saying, "I do not agree that we have a failed policy. I do not believe that the current policy has failed." He may be the only person in America that believes that, Mr. President. This is a judgment issue, not an honor issue. Of course, the civilian leadership is responsible. I believe that this former Secretary of Defense will go down in history with Robert Strange McNamara. But military leaders are also responsible. That's why we give them positions of responsibility, because we trust it, we place in their trust our most precious asset, American blood. During his own nomination hearing on January 23rd, Lieutenant General Petraeus stated that 5 additional brigades were required to implement the president's new military strategy, and that he could not accomplish his mission if he didn't have these additional troops. I, for one, worry that 5 brigades may still be insufficient to accomplish all we are asking our troops to do in Iraq, and would prefer that we are on the side of too many troops rather than too few, as has been the case in the past. General Casey, however, confounding the experts, said in his hearing, quote, "We do need an additional 2 brigades to implement that plan. Not 5, Mr. President, not more than 5, but just 2. General Casey said that the additional 3 brigades the department will send, quote, "merely gives General Petraeus great flexibility." Remember, we are putting this person, who still doesn't believe that we need 5 brigades, in the position to be the one who's implementing the policy. Given these and other judgments, I don't see in this nominee an accurate assessment of the situation in Iraq or what's required to avoid catastrophe there. Now, my colleague from Michigan says, well, it's all the civilian commander's fault. I'll put plenty of blame on the civilian commanders, and I have for many years. But somehow to absolve the military commander on the ground there conducting the operations of any responsibility flies in the face of everything I ever learned in my lifetime of involvement with the military. You know, just recently, Mr. Chairman, I noticed in the paper that there was a submarine and 4 sailors were washed overboard. I believe they were later rescued. the commander of the submarine was relieved. I still remember in my earliest youth when the captain was asleep in the cabin and the USS Missouri ran aground in the mud flats off someplace south of here. He was relieved that day of his command. We put people in positions of responsibility and hold them responsible, and we try to reward them as much as we can when they succeed with the approval of a grateful nation. But we also hold them responsible for failure. My friend from Michigan and I just have a very different view of the responsibilities of commanders in the field, which is why during World War II and other wars, we have relieved commanders in the field because they were not accomplishing the mission. And if they didn't like the mission, they didn't speak up to get the mission changed. And if they embraced a failed mission, then they were held even more responsible. Mr. President, I would go on. I want to emphasize again that General Case, in the hearing just the other day, Senator Levin said, I'm just wondering whether... But this description, he came to the point, after all these years of not having what everybody wanted, which is success in Iraq, he finally described that mistakes were made. And then he said, yes, one could define that during what we're doing as, quote, maybe a slow failure. In other words, Senator Levin was asking General Casey if what has happened in Iraq was a, quote, slow failure, as stated by the President of the United States. General Casey, I didn't. I actually don't see it as slow failure. I actually see it as slow progress. In the last 4 weeks, I believe, Mr. President, we've had 5 helicopters shot down. Casualties have spiked to a very high. I just saw in one of the newspapers this morning, over the past 3 months period, they've been perhaps as high or highest of any time in the war. And we are in a situation of slow progress. Judgment. We expect people who are placed in position of responsibility to exercise good judgment. Mr. President, there's a lot I could say in response to my friend from Michigan's statements concerning no responsibility whatsoever for the failures in the hands of the commander on the ground in Iraq. I mean, on its face, it is a rather unusual interpretation of the responsibility we give to our commanders on the ground. Of course, the ultimate responsibility rests with civilian leadership. Of course it does. That's how our democracy is shaped. But we don't absolve anybody in the chain of command, civilian or military, of responsibility for failure. And it is widely acknowledged by everyone, perhaps with the exception of General Casey, that the policy in Iraq has been a failure. That's why we are trying a new strategy in hopes that we have one more chance to prevail in very, very difficult conditions. Mr. President, there's an old saw about those who ignore the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them. During the Vietnam War, there was failure in Vietnam. General Westmoreland, then head of the forces in Vietnam, was brought back and made chief of staff of the Army, even though our policy and strategy in Vietnam had failed. Ask any young one who was a young officer in those days in the United States Army or Marine Corps. It was a blow to their morale because they were held responsible for their performance on the field of battle. We are holding our men and women, both officer and enlisted, responsible for their behavior on the field of battle as to whether they succeed or fail. But now, in this particular instance, a failed commander is now again, unfortunately, being promoted to a greater position of responsibility, and we are again repeating the lessons of history because we ignore them. Mr. President, I yield the floor. I intend, to vote against the nomination of General Casey, and I hope that my colleagues will as well. And I say that with all due respect to his honorable service of him and his family to this nation. It has nothing to do with honorable service. It has everything to do with judgment and positions of responsibility, just as Abraham Lincoln held generals responsible for performance on the battlefield. So today, we should hold commanders responsible for performance on the battlefield. I want to repeat again, in case Senator Levin didn't hear me. I have criticized the policies and placed responsibilities on the President, the Vice President, and the former Secretary of Defense for the last 3 years over a failed policy in Iraq. The difference that Senator Levin and I seem to have is that we also hold the responsible the commanders in the field for giving accurate information, for providing recommendations that will help to win a conflict, rather than subscribing and continuing to this day, to this very day, to support a policy that everyone acknowledges has failed. And by the way, I said today says that are failed, not quotes from a month ago or 6 months ago or a year ago, I say to my friend from Michigan. And no one decried those comments like last throws and stuff happens and dead enders more than I did at the time. But I hold the entire chain of command responsible down to the commanders in the field. He says, just a few days ago, quote, "I don't see it as slow failure. I actually see it as slow progress." The unclassified NIE that we've just read, the National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq, says, quote, "We're not making progress. It says we're losing." So we're going to make head of Chief of Staff of the Army, the guy that thinks that, quote, "We're making slow progress," as opposed to the National Intelligence Estimate, which is agreed on by our entire intelligence establishment, that we're losing. So, of course we hold people responsible. Of course we do. Do I hold our former Secretary of Defense responsible? Absolutely. Absolutely. And if he was up for another job, I'd be standing here on the floor objecting to it. Do I hold others in the administration responsible? Absolutely. But this is a leader who is up for increased responsibility, and he has failed in his mission, and that's really what it's all about. An honorable and decent man who has served his country. But the message throughout the military now is, unfortunately, as it was with General Westmoreland, even though you fail, you're going to be promoted. So to somehow say that the commander in the field is in some way not responsible in any way for the, quote, mistakes, I think flies in the face not only of the record, but the tradition we have in the United States of America of placing the commanders in the field in positions of responsibility and making them accountable for their performance and how they carry out those responsibilities. I'm sure that the senator from Michigan and I will continue to disagree with this on some period of time, because we have a philosophical difference, fundamental difference of opinion. If you want to blame everything on the civilian leadership, who are of course responsible, who of course history will judge very harshly, that's one way of looking at it. If you say that responsibility is shared down to the commanders in the field, as I do, then you would probably have a different view. I yield the floor.